Okay. Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
I need to get something out of the way before I announce the title of my talk. I was given a perfect excuse as to why I don't have purple on. See, I don't buy my clothes. Lois does. I just wear them. And I have no purple with me. So I found somebody had a purple towel back there. Will this do for the moment? Okay, so I met the criteria, and I can put it aside now. Well, my name is George McCurdy, and today my privilege, and I say that not in a flippy way, it's my privilege to be able to present some thoughts that are gleaned from the doctrine of life, beginning with number 92 that reads to 103. And I have given the title of this talk, Signs Drawn from the Lord's Word. Signs. So that's my topic, and I want to elaborate on that and invite you as I do the presentation. If a question comes to mind, put your hand up right away. Before I go into the talk, I'm going to need your imagination. Imagine that this pot is filled with boiling water. I mean, it's really hot. Now, I have in my hand a potato, and I put that potato in the boiling water. What's going to happen to the potato as it is cooking in that boiling water? It becomes soft. Something, it's hot, but it becomes soft. All right, same boiling water, I put an egg in it. What happens to the egg? It gets hard. Same conditions. Water that's boiling, one turns soft, one turns hard. What is the conclusion that we can draw from this little analogy? I'm going to read it to you. The same boiling water that softens the potato hardens the egg. It's about what we are made of, not the circumstances. Hold on to that thought because I want to come back to it in the talk. Boiling water, potato, egg. A nice little illustration for us to reflect on. Okay. Imagine if in our world all the signs were taken away. Now, I had a fun experience yesterday. I went to Trumbull's hardware store. I'll tell you the story about that later. I bought myself some signs. Isn't it wonderful to know that if in case there's an emergency, we can run to an exit? We need that sign. We need to have it. It's a good prep. In my cabin, at the Caxton cabin, it's made 99.9% of wood. But in the ceiling, there's a little fire detector. And a little green light stays on, but occasionally a flickering red light comes on to tell me it's working in case there's a fire. That little red light is only going to have a whistle and a noise. I need that sign. At my home, we have a carbon monoxide little device. And one time, we had the window of our bedroom open, and a wind came up, and it started to blow the exhaust from a fan that was outside into the house, and that carbon monoxide thing went off. I was so happy that thing was there to give me a sign that that silent killer of carbon monoxide would have done damage to our family. I've walked into a restaurant, and it's very nice to see a sign when I'm looking for a restroom. One's the ladies' room, and one's the men's room. Very helpful, is it not? Anybody ever walk into the wrong bathroom?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I'm very... And by the way, you notice when you go into a restaurant, the women's room is on the right and the men's room's on the left? Women are always right. It's really nice to have a sign that says fire escape. Not that we need to do it, but it's nice to have it there. And it's nice in our cabin, and I borrowed this from the cabin, but it's nice to have this sign. There it is, one over there, pointing right at the fire extinguisher. It doesn't upset me that sign's there. In my car, we have the GPS. How many of you have GPSs in your car? Are they not wonderful? I mean, there are times that it misleads me, but 90 times out of 100, it gets me to my direction. I love that sign. But we do need to have caution signs. I mean, it's life. It doesn't upset me that there are that certain signs that are there to direct me. Agree? Everybody agree? We need signs. They are our friends. They, even though they have that little warning nature about them, I'm glad they're there. All right, I'm trying to set up that the numbers that we're going to take up today from the doctrine of life, there are signs. There are signs that sometimes are helpful. There are signs that sometimes warn, but I don't want to get uptight about it. I want us to go back to our let's think positive. The things that I'm about to say may at first sound woo. Well, that's okay. We need those things to tell us, if I'm going to ride my motorcycle, Ross, 150 miles an hour in pouring rain, I better have a little sign, slow down. We need it. Okay. I'm trying to establish I don't want what I'm about to present to become that's a downer. Somebody has a car out here. I love the little sign on it says, don't drive faster than your angels can fly to keep up with you. Who owns that car, by the way? Is that yours? Don't drive faster than your angels can keep up with you. Kind of a nice thought, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah. So it's a positive thing, even though people may giggle. It's a nice little thought. Let's not go trying to run ahead of the Lord or run ahead of our angels. Let's let them keep up with us. Nice little thought. All right, so what I'm going to then turn to is that the sign number one in the doctrine of life talks about the fact that you and I have what's called proprium. Anybody want to give their version or definition of what proprium is?
Ego.
Ego, okay. Me, myself, and I? Out of control? Yes. Okay. Translators have translated the word proprium to the word own, O-W-N. Own, what I own, now this is mine, but you will not find this anywhere in the writings, but when I read the word proprium and it's talking about me, myself, and I notice that I want to put a small p. Thank you, Shada, for reading that. When John said, I must decrease and he must increase. That's a wonderful little reminder, little sign. And then it says later in the writings that what you and I need to do is to put off, get rid of, push aside our little p, proprium, and take on the Lord's proprium. And that's why I've written this with a capital P and the line under it. So the doctrine of life says one of the signs that we need to look for is when I'm getting too big for my britches, I need to humble down and let the Lord come in. Now, this number in the doctrine of life says we must uproot. Oh, does that sound painful? We must uproot that first proprium of ours, get rid of it, and take on more and more of the Lord's proprium. So the little signpost, the little arrow, the little reminder is, okay, fellas, we need to become a little bit more conscious of the fact that we need to get rid of certain things and take on more holy things. useful sign? Does it sound, we must pluck out our first one? That word pluck out seems so painful. But again, it's a reminder. It's a signpost. We need to humble down. So the next little signpost, and I want to read it because the wording of it is so, for me, illustrative. It comes from a number here. Okay. What constitutes the first root of life needs to be plucked out and regarded as an evil, and it will be injurious to our soul. Everyone that does battling against it can do and see that that first proprium can be at times infernal and horrible, but it is not severe. So we need this quote, and please, I want to read it maybe twice. To combat the first root of our life is not severe, except in the case of those who have given free rein to it and do not want to get rid of it. For those that set out with a purpose and have not stubbornly clung to their proprium, it is not severe to get rid of. Let them even once a week, twice a month, or resist evil, and they will perceive that there is a change occurring. Now, may I say that again? The Lord says, let's get rid of this little P and take on more of His qualities, and it's not as hard as you might think. Try it once a week. Try it twice a month, and you will perceive a change and that it is possible. I like that little sign. Do you not? Because sometimes it does seem very hard to overcome and become humble. But the signpost says, try it once a week, try it twice a month, but try it and change, and you will perceive that there's a nice change. Okay, now I want to go to this quote and sign that's about these two words. How many of you are familiar with the word efflux and influx? Okay, let's define efflux. Somebody out there, put their hand up. What does efflux mean? It's emptying the closet. It's emptying the attic. It's getting rid of stuff that's cluttering up. It's emptying out to do what? Make room for some influx. Okay, so we need little signs that say efflux, influx, to be reminders to us that we've got a job to do. Now, there is a quote here that I'm going to read, and I'll give you the source so that if you ever want to read it again. It is from the Arcana, number 5828. I'll say it again after I read it. There is a universal law. Universal law. That is constant and perpetual. So here's a little sign that's saying what I'm about to read to you is constant, it's eternal. Here's the sign. The Lord is to a degree working to check our efflux, that which is blocked. So if I don't empty out and I block that emptying out, something's going to pay the price. Influx is going to be blocked. So if I don't empty out, influx does not have a way of coming in. If efflux is checked, then influx is checked. When there is efflux, there will be continual influx from heaven, and from heaven by way of the Lord. So here's a little signpost, friends. We need to do this, do this, do this, and do this. Sound like scary signs or helpful signs? Helpful. It's a reminder. This is what today's about. I need to empty something out in me so that I can have, and by the way, it's a continual universal. It's not something I can do occasionally. It's something I need to do always. And I don't want to keep putting a burden on our back. I want it to be a challenge. Today, I need to get rid of something that's going to be blocking influx. I want the Lord to flow in. I want more of His proprium in me than my own proprium. Little helpful sign. Now, I put two words up here on the board. Anybody want to tell me what this is representing? What is this saying, this word? Can you read it? Somebody in the back, read it for me.
Requited love.
Requited love. What does that mean? Something, yeah, it's a love that has mutuality to it. I love you, you love me. Requited love is a wonderful thing. What is unrequited love? What would that be?
One way.
Without being too personal, anybody in this room ever experience unrequited love? What happens in this unrequited love? You are seeing somebody and your little heart beats kind of fast, you feel warm, and you look for some signals back that maybe they too feel the same way, but it doesn't happen. It's kind of a sad thing, isn't it? I went online. Thank goodness for Google. Isn't Google wonderful? You put in the word unrequited love, and all of a sudden up pops some rules about what to do when unrequited love happens. It says, try to get away. Try to get away from meeting, bumping into that person. It says, don't call them. The next one is, don't go to places where you know they frequent. Make yourself scarce. If you have to call them, maybe they're on a committee, call them, but make sure that when you call them that you have a good excuse to end the conversation quickly. Only call back, but delay for a couple of days. And then the last one is take the time to reflect on the situation and learn how to live with yourself. Because, you know, when there's unrequited love, sometimes we bother ourselves to be with and around them a lot, and after a while the person says, are you stalking me? Well, that was intended to be funny. That went over like a lead balloon. But anyway, unrequited love can be very, very serious. Martha? Okay. Now, thank you, Martha. That comes to the point. Here's what the writings say about unrequited love. It says here, the Lord loves each and every one of us, and He wills to dwell with us. Yet He cannot love us and dwell with us unless He is received and loved in return. May I read that again? The Lord wills to dwell with us, and He cannot love us and dwell with us unless we receive Him and love Him in return. Yes, but that's why I asked Shada to read that verse from Revelation. Remember the picture? How many of you have seen that artist rendition of the Lord standing outside of a beautiful, beautiful door? And where He is, there's no door handle on the outside. He knocks on the door, and it says, any man that hears My voice and opens the door, the Lord's a gentleman. He doesn't knock the door down. He doesn't and the writings are clear. If it had pleased the Lord, there are countless numbers of ways that He could make us love Him. But that would ruin the conjunction because it would be forced. It was being pushed on us. So the Lord stands at the door and knocks and waits for us inside to turn the handle and open the door and invite him in. He wants requited love from us. He does not want this situation. And yes, Lois, he never leaves us. And I also love the story in the writings, the signs that say, angels are with us. They love us. It says they look at us as a brother or a sister. And when we make a mistake, they say, oh, but he's only human. And then there's another quote I love. It says, the angels love us so much that they are even willing and wish that they could go to hell in our place. Now, how many of you as a parent know that kind of love? Your child gets sick, what's your first expression? I wish it was me. So the Lord loves us, the angels love us, they are with us, they don't want us to fly too fast. They want us to go. So the number in the doctrine of life, talking about these two kinds of love, I see a sign that says, love the Lord back. Open the door. Invite him in. And what is he going to do? He'll come and sit and sup with us. So I love that little signpost that we have in the doctrine of life here. It's a reminder. Look at the sort of the sequence. Change the small p, take on the big p. Empty things out so that the influx can occur. The Lord loves us. He urges us, love me back. If you love me back, I can do so much with you. There's so much more potential. Now, I have over here, anybody familiar with doctors and soap notes? How many of you have ever soap notes?
Yeah, I did, because I was a nurse.
Okay. Soap notes. The doctor, when I walk into his office, the one I have anyway, wants to say, George, why are you here? And I'll tell him, well, I got a little ache here, and he'll say, oh. So I notice he's writing down notes subjectively. This is what I, as a patient, presented myself, saying what I see is the problem. Thank goodness he doesn't always go with my word or my report. He orders certain tests. I go get my blood checked, and within a week or so, he calls me back to tell me what the results were. Objectively, then he's got to have a plan. What's the assessment? You know, what's the diagnosis? What's needed? So he, through this assessment of all the things that come back in that blood test, he then develops a plan. Well, I see in the lessons that we have from the doctrine of life, soap notes written all over them. Where, you know, the Lord is trying to get me to take an assessment so that I can go into this. And the object is, let's get rid of some stuff so that this can happen. So I'm suggesting to our group here, when you read the doctrine of life, particularly these numbers of 93 to 102, don't ignore seeing some of the wonderful signs that the Lord is giving us to help us develop a plan. I need a plan. Do you not need? I mean, when I get up through the day, I often sit down at some point of the day and take out a little list about what I want to accomplish today. Do any of you do this? There's a lot of fun as you develop that to go through and you see yourself crossing them off one at a time. There's a sense of satisfaction, a sense of completion. So the numbers that I'm presenting to you today, and I'm urging you, pick up the book copies. Suzanne's made copies available here if you want to have your own, and underline. Put note. Are any of you note underliners making notes in columns? I think it's a wonderful plan. People say, "Oh, it's a kind of like a holy book." I don't want to be. No. Because what I find is discovery. I have come back to read the same passages, and I see something I underline, and I thought, "Well, that was nice." But wait a minute, why didn't I underline this part? there's been some growth. And the reason I didn't underline something previously, my state wasn't ready. Maybe as I emptied myself up, suddenly I read that passage and I see a whole wealth of information. And I'm happy that I'm now able to underline something right underneath it to add to it. Columns. So I do want to develop a program and a life where I am loving the Lord back so that he can love me even more. I want to open that door. So again, my whole theme for the two lectures I have is let's be positive. Hell wants us to be negative. Hell, you know, we saw last night the program that Curtis talked about, the head, the bed. I was wanting screaming to him, say, tell everybody hell's in my head messing me up, giving me bad messages about myself. What a jerk you are. You know, the Lord, you're not even worth the time the Lord's going to have. I mean, all those bad messages. So we need signposts all along, and I am appreciative of the chapter or the numbers that I picked to be able to talk to you about this morning. I want us to have caution signs. You know, that's why I asked Lois, put this on the bottom. Caution. Pay attention. You know where the fire extinguisher is to put out the flames. Now, let's go back to the opening little object lesson I had with the pan, the boiling water, the potato, the eggs. What did any of you get out of that little illustration? Somebody respond. Martha?
We're all different, and we take things in different ways.
Okay. And it's dependent on what we make or what we are. I mean, you know, one became hard, one became soft. I think I see a little signpost there reminding me, keep yourself soft. And don't get hard-boiled about it. Anybody else?
Yes. Well, it could be also the egg and the potato are for different uses. Sometimes we need the egg for different
uses. Okay. Thank you. Anybody else?
To be a little bit more dense about it.
That was a home. Be a little more dense about it.
I mean, you could say that the water is like the truth, and how we as individuals, how we respond to the truth. Some people turn away from it because they put themselves in front of the Lord, and other people that are looking towards the Lord will react.
And we're all going to get in boiling water, somehow or other.
Yeah.
And I think I like the potato egg thing to be a reminder. You know, what I'm made of is going to determine which one of those little object lessons might apply to me. Anybody else about the little object lesson of the boiling water, potato and egg? Any other thought? Yes, Shada.
No.
Thank you. Yes, Hugh.
In listening to the explanation, and Richard was saying to get dense about it, that's what happened with the ink.
Okay.
But I was looking at the heat from the different responses to reception of heat, which corresponds to light. That each one received the heat in a different way according to its form. But there is one thing that people can do that eggs and potatoes can't do. We can change something of our form so that we can go from being a non-receiver of love to a receiver of love. And that's what the potato can't do.
Yes.
We can also get out of hot water when we need to.
Okay.
Hopefully.
Yes.
Or not jump in the first place.
Right. Right. Okay. May I ask another question? I had to work a couple of years with the doctors, and I had to review. This was after this is another job I had after I retired from the ministry, the Air Force, and blah, blah, blah. I had to review the SOAP notes. And if the SOAP notes were not in order, they got sent back so that the doctors paid attention and did them properly. But do any of you see that in a sort of a kind little way, you might employ this formula? What is the subjective thing of our life? I'm pretty unhappy. But am I being objective as to why I'm not happy? You know, have I done any testing so that I can begin to make a proper assessment, so that I can come up with a proper plan? I think, you know, if we're going to spiritually get healthy, we in a little bit have to be like the doctor, do we not? I mean, that's what self-examination is all about, looking honestly at what's going on, not putting the blame on the Lord or somebody else. It's not my fault. You know, we've got to be so that we can come up with a plan. So, again, back to my, what in the world would we do without signs, without something pointing the way? So if and when you read the doctrine of life again, and it says we've got to shun evils as sins, let's get a plan. But if we don't get to the point where we love the Lord back, it's a plan that's not going to work very well. So I'm appreciative of the fact that I got from the religious director of the camp, pick something in the doctrine of life to talk about. Well, I'm happy because it gave me a plan of doing efflux so that influx can occur. So don't let hell, please, mess with your mind and tell you that you're a jerk, that it's all over, you know, the Lord doesn't love you anymore. No, he's standing at the door always knocking. And I need to be the one to open the door and invite him in. Okay? So this is a happy, for me, it was a happy sitting down, reflecting, drawing up my little today I'm going to do, and here's the plan. So I hope I've been somewhat inspirational to you. I didn't talk as fast as Curtis Childs talks. I don't know how he talks that fast. Huh? He's young? I got to talk a little slower and even process it as I'm talking, but I hope, again, this will be something. You know, the reason I love object lessons is there's a passage in the writing or the word. I forget who it was. I think it was Elijah. Well, he said, you have to have a peg upon which you can hang information. And my object lessons are like those little pegs in my mind that I can hang a truth, hang a sign on. So if I keep coming back to you with object lessons, It's because I'm trying to put the pegs in your heart, in your, my mind, and such what, so that we can work together. That's what I see about soap notes. Let's not just willy-nilly, let's get a good plan. And the plan is based on loving the Lord. He wants to love us, and he gives us this ability to reciprocate. And so I want to be very, very mindful. So I will leave, except for this one, I'll leave this up for all of us to be reminders. We need signs. We need a plan. So do well with your soap notes, friends, because I'm going to be working on mine. Any other thoughts or comments?
Is this the question and answer period?
Yes, it was. Yeah.
We're recording the lectures, and usually when the lecture is done, we have question and answer, and we'd like you to use the microphone so people listening to the recording can hear it and give your name.
Okay.
If I'd known there have been so many wonderful things said by the audience during the lecture, I kind of wanted to pass it around then, but I didn't want to interrupt the flow. But at this point, unless you all decide we shouldn't do it, we would like to use the microphone.
There's
this is Suzanne. I don't know if you have a comment about me recording or what.
This is Susanna Curry. I really appreciated the soap notes part because I use them in my work as a hospice chaplain. But for myself personally, one of the things that I do that is kind of sorting out that eternal question, what's my part and what's the Lord's part, in the and this is sort of addressing the proprium with the little p and the big p, is I frequently have a lot on my mind that I need to do. So I always used to have a very long to-do list that I prioritize what I have to do in what order. I've since come to a lot more peace with that, yes, I need to write things on the list, so that's the little p, proprium, but I wait to see what the Lord inspires me to do from the list, to let the Lord guide the list instead of trying to figure it out myself. And I'm so much more peaceful, and I have a shorter list, so I'm not really sure how that happened. But it feels really good. And the soap notes, for me personally, is one of those, what's the my part, what's the Lord's part? Because subjective, that's my part. I need to assess where I am. Objective is thinking about for a minute, okay, what does God see here? You know, what is from God's perspective what's really going on? And then the assessment, that's my part again. I have to assess, well, how do I feel about that? What do I think I might do about it? But the key is to let the P, the plan, be God's plan. To even though we've assessed where we think we should go and what we think we should do, to be open to God's leading. So it's sort of an alternating the my part, God's part, my part, God's part. And that seems to work pretty well. So I would say we need to invite the Lord into the soap notes process, not have it all be about us.
Thank you. While maybe someone's thinking about speaking, I did want to read this quote from Matthew 6:24. No person can serve two masters, for either they will hate one and love the other, or else they will hold to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and mammon. I mean, there's another signpost making it plain. We've got a choice. So I had intended to read that, so let me insert that. Anybody else want to? Okay, Jesse.
Hi, it's Jesse White. I was thinking about how we need to make time for the efflux part, because especially in my life, I know there's so much going on that you focus on the little details, and I've got to get this done, and I've got to get up in the morning at this time and get all these things done. And I'm not letting just what's going to happen, or letting myself think about things, or letting the Lord help me think about things. And a great example is I lost my husband a couple years ago to cancer, and after he died, I had about a week to maybe a little over a week to put together his service, his memorial service. And I really, that was my main chore. I didn't really have anything else to do. And I had been so focused on taking care of him that really all the worldly things of vacuuming or whatever was on my list had kind of gone away. And so I started reading the Bible, I started reading Swedenborg, and it made so much more sense to me. And it was very powerful to think that because I was in that state where I was sort of wanting to listen to whatever was going to come from the Lord, everything just made more sense, and I was so open to it. Whereas in the day-to-day life, when you're doing all these things, you just really have to make time for it. Otherwise, it's hard to listen.
May I tell you a secret? She doesn't know I'm saying this. Jesse went to a college. What was the name of the college?
Sweetbriar College.
Jesse got the word that the college was going to close. It upset her and many others. What happened, Jesse?
The alumni pulled together and we have kept it open.
And still are not, they've got mm-hmm. enough money to continue to operate, mm-hmm. but they're not giving up because they're yep. planning for the next round.
We have to keep raising money.
Is there a sign in that story, Jesse, mm. that we could put up?
Yeah, I mean, there's faith, there's, you know, reaching out to each other and,
yep.
you know.
They found out that there was more strength out there than they had imagined. And I think that the soap notes, if you could, something clicked. Something came together. So we have a powerful potential. And so the numbers that I presented today, all of those signs were encouragement to me and not a negative. I think I have 1 minute left. So anybody else want to have a chance to contribute to their thought? Well, thank you. You were very responsive, and I appreciated being your guide and your host.